great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're going to talk exercise and therapy and talk about it as an investment in your future health. Just like your vehicle, your body runs best with regular maintenance. And we'll talk about that with our two guests. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back.
I want to be here, Larry. Thank you.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Jill, good to see you again as well.
It's great to be here on this cold, cold day.
I want to talk about that a little bit as we get going here. Do you, maybe so as we'll get into it. But as you listen to these two expert talk about how long you should be doing an exercise or therapy program, you have questions about that. Those, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you need some advice from one of our physical therapists. Join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Yeah, that cold weather really puts the kibosh on an exercise if you're doing it outside. But let's talk about how often you will tell me that patients will stop doing their therapy exercises too early. I'm saying that from thinking about my own therapy. And I probably quit a little early once at least. But does
once.
That happen pretty well, pretty often?
I don't, there's a challenge here because it's a transition from therapy into a lifelong or lifetime habit. So it really shouldn't be that you quit your therapy, is that you should take this therapy and transition or include it into your permanent lifestyle. That's really what the goal is.
Yeah. So if you think of, you know, exercise or therapeutic exercise along a continuum, at one end you have physical therapy, where you have some issue that needs to be addressed and you attend physical therapy and you get the things to work on. And at some point you transition from therapy into wellness. But it's a, as Jill said, it's a smooth transition. It isn't like one stops and the next starts. So in the research where they talk about you know, continuing physical activity and ongoing physical activity, one of the factors that kept these people in this research study going was this occasional contact with their physical therapist over the course of their intervention. So, you know, we get into this issue of, well, you know, I feel good enough, maybe I don't need it, versus keeping touch with your PT as things change, particularly when you're talking about a chronic condition. If you have an acute ankle sprain, things are going to resolve, you know, in some sort of a time frame. But if you have a chronic condition, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or osteoarthritis or any of a number of chronic conditions, things are going to change more slowly. So being able to touch base with your physical therapist over time helps people remain active and adherent to their exercise program. You know, then you get into the logistics of third-party payers. So right. that's a barrier for people. No question it's a barrier.
But it's, I always equate it to training wheels. So when you're learning to ride a bike, you start with training wheels and you slowly increase the height of the training wheel so you're doing a little bit more on your own. And eventually you take those training wheels off. It's exactly what physical therapy is. We start by giving you a lot of guidance and a lot of supervision with regards to your chronic condition or your injury. And then slowly, The patient will go out and discover things that work really well for them or things that don't work so well, and they report back to their physical therapist, and we teach them how to modify or make those changes. And eventually they kind of leave the nest, or they go out and they're on their own and those training wheels have been removed. However, as times change and your joints change, a checkup is a really good thing. I think we'd all agree that some accountability is really important. And so kind of having those checkups or that accountability for, are you doing your exercises? And if not, why and what modifications do we need to make so you're able to succeed are really important. I think that's a really important comment that Lori made.
Yeah. And I know whether it be exercise or therapy, sometimes we think about these things as something we just do until our end goal, whether that be lose weight or get rid of pain. But maybe we need to be thinking, or I think we should be thinking about these more as a lifelong kind of commitment. And I can remember when that changed in my own thinking quite a few years back now. It's been, time flies, I guess, but I was looking at my morning jogs as, you know, a way to lose a little bit of weight. And then over time, I just began to realize, you know what, this is something that I should just be doing, not as a goal of just losing weight, but for the fun of it and for the exercise and the health benefits it offers.
That you're exactly right. And that's what they found in this research paper where they did a what's called a qualitative study where they interviewed people. And one of the key take-home messages was what you just said. It was dedication. So a positive mindset, a changed mindset. So yours changed from I'm doing this to lose weight to, hey, what's called the awareness subcategory, which is, hey, there's some health gains to be had here, having insight into your responses to this and insight into your own motivations and having it become a habit and commitment. And I thought of that when you opened the show talking about the weather, because there were people who posted on Facebook yesterday that they were outside exercising, winter biking, outside snowshoeing, cross-country skiing in that bitter cold. And that's a dedication. That's a motivation. That's a mindset of I'm going to do this regardless.
Well, I tell you what, it's one of the issues with keeping things going. This may be just an aside, but for me, I do not like to have weather like this. I've been out of some days, but some days I just didn't go out because it was just too darn cold. And I've noticed in the past, if I was sick or had a little injury or something, it was harder to get going again, even after a week or so off.
You're absolutely right. You are absolutely. And that was another finding from this research study is that dedication and that habit, that when people had a small setback like that, it was tough to get back in. So having that internal motivation and that awareness of that, of if I stop, then this is what's going to happen. So, you know, if you don't like the cold and you can't get outside, then you figure out, okay, what am I going to do? You know, maybe you go up and down the stairs, you know, three times every hour, and that's what your exercise is on a cold day, but you don't stop. You don't just say, oh, I'm going to sit and, you know, binge watch Netflix until the cold weather passes.
Do you think setting goals helps, you know, making a commitment, Jill?
I think as Lori always says, it's very important to know thyself and know what motivates you. So if setting a goal for you to obtain is helpful, then that's a wonderful strategy. Sometimes it's being held accountable or exercising with a partner. So sometimes it's really hard to get outside by yourself. But if you know somebody else is depending upon you to be there and meet you at the corner early in the morning to go for that morning jog, that can help you. So just knowing what things work for you, I think is really important. Some people really view exercise as a time to socialize. That's their socialization. And so if they know that they're going to be out with friends, that'll help. For others, it's my quiet time and it's don't interrupt mommy while she's exercising time. And so if I know that I'm guaranteed an hour where I'm not going to be interrupted, the cell phone is away, there's no electronics, the children know not to come in the exercise room when mom has the door shut, that's my motivation.
It's sounding really personal there, Jill.
I did get a little personal. I did get quite personal towards the end there, didn't I? But whatever it takes to motivate the person whether it's an internal goal or an external goal, I think that's a great strategy.
And if you're injured and it doesn't feel like you're making any progress, I'm thinking that that's a time when people say, why the heck am I doing this? I'm not making any progress.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I had a long talk last night with one of my children who has undergone hip surgery, both hips. And he's in a real funk right now because he feels like he's lost a lot of ground and he's not making any progress. And it's a combination of two hip surgeries in the middle of a pandemic with no school. So there's a lot of layers of complexity to that. And so, you know, that's a really, really tough situation. So that's when having a conversation with your physical therapist becomes important, because we oftentimes, like parents, I'm just feeling it personally today. You have in your head, I can see a timeline. As a physical therapist, I can see the timeline of this patient's progress, and I can see where they're going. It's really hard when you live the day to day with it because you don't see it. But when you see your PT, you know, maybe you're at a place where you're seeing them once every couple of weeks, your physical therapist can see that progress from the last time you were seen. And it may seem small to you, but the physical therapist in their head can see this timeline. They can see where you're headed, and they can prognosticate, for lack of a better word. So talk to them about it. Ask them, you know, what's the end game here? How far am I going to make? What's the time frame? And ask the PT to share with you what's in his or her head.
Kevin in Oregon, Wisconsin, has something that I believe kind of relates to this. So let's go there. Kevin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I've gone through physical therapy numerous times over my life for lower back injuries. And every time I go in, there's a big upcharge for assessment, but then the cost sort of decays out. But as soon as I take a break from the PT, I have to go through reassessment. With the offerings by my employer now to do like physical coaching, third-party apps that track my routine, how can I better transition physical therapy into the tracking where they can share information between my PT and my personal coach, where it's not as quite as expensive, but I still get that accountability partner? Can you talk about how this area of transitioning is being enabled by mobility and maybe lower cost providers? I'll take my message off here.
Thank you for calling. Lori, do you want to take a crack at that?
Oh, that's a great question. So the very first issue that came to my mind when you talk about the sharing of information is HIPAA.
Right.
So as licensed medical providers, we have to be very careful. We are not allowed to share medical information with someone who is not a medical provider for your care. So that's the overarching issue for us. In terms of that transitioning thing, you know, we would hope that we have trained you enough and educated you enough to be able to take what you have learned in physical therapy and transition it to your coach. And having that kind of a coach is a fabulous way for you to remain accountable to someone as you make that transition out of structured medical care into wellness. And having a wellness provider who is well-educated and willing to listen to you and the information that you bring based upon what you've learned in physical therapy. There's also a possibility in terms of your workplace, if they would like to have a physical therapist come and talk to the wellness coaches, if they have a cadre of wellness coaches that they have recruited, we could certainly do educational programming for those people on what kinds of things to be concerned about or what things to look for.
Right, exactly. But, you know, Kevin, I think you need to give yourself a lot of credit for being so proactive. I mean, you are doing a great job with, once you get this education from your therapist, you're working with a coach that's keeping you accountable and keeping you active, which I think is really important. So I would say you're probably a step ahead of most people in this whole process of maintaining your activity level and maintaining your physical activity, even though you do have a chronic condition with low back pain. So there are a lot of barriers. Unfortunately, Lori mentioned HIPAA, but I think despite those, it sounds like you're doing a really good job where you are thus far. And I agree with Lori. Sometimes the communication, if a PT can come in and speak to coaches, performance coaches, wellness people within your workplace, that's a great strategy.
That's a great strategy.
And just to speak to the upcharge you referred to every time you come back in, mm-hmm. if you're coming in after you've been discharged from a plan of care, we are required by our professional organization and by our state licensing to perform a new evaluation, because we cannot assume that whatever you're coming in for today is the same thing that you were coming in before. Even if it feels the same, things have changed. You need to be reevaluated, reassessed, and a new plan of care established. And that's what that extra charge is about.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne Brody, our guests today. Great to have them with us as we talk about physical therapy, long-term commitment to physical activity. I'm Larry Mueller, Christine Myshock, Tyler Ditter, our engineers, Natalie Guyette, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking physical therapy with our two guests today, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. You can join in. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Gwen in Weyerhaeuser, Wisconsin. Gwen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm so excited to get through to Jill and Lori. I've tried here for a couple of months, so let me try to nutshell my question. I was diagnosed with bilateral torn gluteal tendons in early October after giving up on pain and reduced function and seeing a surgeon. And I was shocked to find out that apparently he defined it as a 70% tear on my left side and about a 50% on the right. And when I heard about the rehab, the post-surgical rehab protocol, I couldn't go there. We were talking 3 months in a wheelchair with a long leg brace on one side and then possibly repeating this on the other side. So I sought the assistance and coaching of a physical therapist, and I'm happy to say that my pain has reduced pretty significantly. My function has increased, but I wanted to know what your experience has been in working with this condition.
Well, that's a great question. I was actually going to ask you, Gwen, how this happened, because this is very unique to have this condition, particularly on both sides.
So, is there a good story?
But I'm going to tell you, I am a retired physical therapist. I have worked in Birch-to-Three for many years and had spent a lot of time on the floor coaching parents and seeing little ones, and I began to have trouble getting up and down from the floor. But my work involved a tremendous amount of driving and sitting. And so I think it's a combination of things not staying in good shape, losing strength. Yep. And when I heard what had happened, I was horrified. I couldn't believe that this had happened. And at first I was scared to death. I was scared that I was going to make it worse. And the PT coach that I found really helped me a lot, kind of gave me some new mental health strategies to deal with this. And I'm better, but I'm still a little bit afraid. And I looked at different surgical approaches at the university where you are, in Rochester, up in Duluth, in Minneapolis, and things are all over the board with this.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Yeah. It's not that common. I see a lot of gluteal tendinopathy with partial tears, mostly in people, who sit, who do a lot of squatting, things like that. So I've seen this fairly often. I haven't seen anyone who's had it diagnosed as a certain percentage tear, but I see a fair amount of gluteal and posterior hip pain that's undiagnosed that I expect is actually this happening. I think it's more common than we know, which is probably why the surgery for it is all over the map. This could be sort of a new horizon in terms of care of the hips. So, I would continue to keep on the path that you're on. You've been working with a PT. What's the end point? How much stronger can you get? How much can your pain decrease? I don't know that anyone can tell you that, because you're probably looking at more of tendon issues or muscular tendinous junction or tendinous bony junction kinds of problems. And those are really avascular areas and have a really hard time healing. So I would say you're probably looking at some compensation from some of the other posterior hip muscles that are going to help pick up some of the slack. I don't know what the end game is, but you've got to keep going. You've got to keep the strong.
Well, good luck, Gwen.
Is that
thank
your question?
You.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Great, really interesting case.
Let's take another call. Peggy in Darlington, your turn. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of my husband, and we're trying to figure out what a next appropriate step would be. He fell off of a breakfast bar stool sideways onto his right side and was diagnosed with a separated shoulder. The x-ray, he only had a plain x-ray, and it also showed a chip in the bottom of the glutoid, I believe it is.
Glenoid?
Glenoid. And I guess I got confused with the other call. And that was on July 6th, and he did have some home therapy at the time. He does have Parkinson's disease, and his legs are weak, and so he also uses a walker, not all the time, but he does use it. And then on October 13th, he had another fall. This fall, he fell straight forward and braced the fall with his arms, and I assume since that's his primary arm, more so on the right side than the left. And he continues to have a lot of pain restricting motion, and he tries to do the exercises but restricted by pain.
Yep.
And he's found that if he puts his hand tightly across the shoulder, that he can sometimes move the arm a little bit more. Can't really move it.
Yeah, you know what this is.
Side.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he should go back to the orthopedic surgeon. He did get steroidal injections a couple weeks after the fall. He didn't have
MRI. Yeah, Lori, go ahead.
So,
or Jill, do you want to? Jill,
Lori can go.
All right, I'll start. You can jump in. The first one, was it a separation or a dislocation? Do you remember?
Yes, definitely separation.
Okay. I think it was
the
probably separation.
Shoulder, the bone that goes from your neck to the shoulder was sticking up, and it was out of place.
It sounds like an AC separation.
Yeah, an AC separation, yeah. So, chances are he's torn his rotator cuff, and that's why he's having a lot of pain. And if he can't move his shoulder, then he could be developing a secondary frozen shoulder.
Right, exactly. And so there's many layers to this, Peggy. You know, the corticosteroid injection is commonly used with people to kind of jumpstart rehabilitation. So the concern is he has to walk with a walker. Occasionally he has Parkinson's, so he has a lot going on already. And now we have a history of a couple falls, which is also concerning. So there are many layers to this. I think the first one being we need to get his shoulder taken care of. So it sounds to me he had a corticosteroid injection. He's still having difficulty with that. I think going back and seeing the orthopedist and seeing if something else can be done or if he needs more structured therapy is a really good strategy with regards to his shoulder. But then the other underlying issue is concerns with balance and falls. And so it sounds like the first one, he fell off a stool. But the second one is a little bit concerning for me because he had two falls in a 3-month time frame. And he has an underlying condition. So the balance is a concern for me. Lori, I'm guessing you're thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and as you noted, his ability to use an assistive device to help steady himself when he's had right. these two falls. So, yeah, so I totally agree with Jill that the next step would be seeing the orthopedic surgeon again, you know, potentially that MRI to see what's going on. My guess is with two falls on that side, if he didn't tear his rotator cuff the first time, he tore it the second time, right. Which is why he's got limited function in the arm. And then if he doesn't move it, then the shoulder freezes and it becomes incredibly painful. And then you have that layer. It just snowballs. So at some point, there's got to be some intervention to stop this downward spiral. So orthopedic surgeon, more therapy. And then there are physical therapists who specialize in balance. So I would have somebody like an orthopedic physical therapist dealing with the shoulder. I would have a falls specialist dealing with the falls issue.
Right. So I'd probably start with the shoulder and then go on to the balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody kind of really, thank you again, Peggy, for calling. A 60-year-old female listener emailed us, kind of relates in a way, I think, wondering if there are exercises that might help with occasional bouts of vertigo. She mentions she also takes, she does take meds, but's wondering if PT could benefit her as well for vertigo. Lori?
So there are some kinds of dizziness that right. physical therapists can help with, but not all forms of dizziness. Some of it depends upon what's causing the vertigo. So she could check with her local healthcare provider and see if there are any physical therapists who specialize in that area of dizziness, vertigo, and balance-related disorders, and see if they can help her. The real question is, what is causing the right. underlying vertigo? Is it Meniere's or some other condition that would be treatable?
Right. So there's a couple things. BPPV, benign positional paroxysmal vertigo, is something that's very commonly treated by physical therapists and responds very favorably. But as Lori mentioned, there are other things that are not treatable or amenable by physical therapy. So vertigo is kind of a very broad term. And so knowing what's driving it is what's really important for her.
All right. Let's take another call. Edie in De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Edie.
Hello, everyone. My question relates to a total knee replacement. I had my right knee replaced the first week in November, and I've really struggled to get decent flexion in that. Couldn't get there till after I had a manipulation under anesthesia done a couple weeks ago, and I'm still going to therapy, have another 2 weeks of that to go. And I need the other knee done, total replacement done on that, as probably within this next year. And I'm looking for suggestions for what to do for better success with that.
Well, let's start with, do you have any idea why you had difficulty with the right one? Are there any factors that you can point to?
Well, I think I've got spinal stenosis and some right SI dysfunction kind of related to that. I think that's played a factor. And my therapist has alluded to some people just for whatever reason develop more inflammatory tissue or try to heal things faster than ideal. Mm-hmm. And her other concern was that my surgeon used staples to close the incision, so we couldn't work on that flexion and work on that kneecap area as quickly as she would have liked to if I hadn't had those staples in for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And those are all variables that I think could have affected this, Edie. I think your therapist is right. So maybe having the conversation with your surgeon about how he closes you, is it possible to use sutures instead of staples, might be a good idea. The other thing is maybe having the conversation with your surgeon about the use of a CPM, a continuous passive motion device, for a short term to see if that helps prevent helps you get your range of motion more quickly. In some cases it's used, most cases it's not, but this could be an exception where a CPM might be something that would be helpful.
So the other thing is, and this is one of the things I tell patients who I know are going to surgery, is you want your knee to be as calm as possible before mm-hmm. surgery. This is not I'm having surgery anyway, so I'm going to go be on my feet for 5 hours, 3 days before. You want your knee to be in a position where you almost ask yourself why you're having surgery. If your knee is swollen and inflamed and annoyed before surgery, and then you superimpose another really inflammatory process on top of it with the surgery, you're going to end up with a big inflammatory hot soup. So you want it to be calm. The other thing is as soon as you can get in a pool where you can bicycle and walk and do more activity without all of your weight on that joint is sometimes helpful for people.
Good.
Especially
luck.
With her underlying stenosis.
Especially with her underlying stenosis. Yes, exactly.
Mm. Edie, thank you so much for calling. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Rose and Toma, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Rose.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I just want to encourage people to continue their exercise. I had a back injury in 1989, and I've been doing exercises every night before I go to bed since then. I've done them in Africa huts. I've done them in tents in Alaska. It's just part of my routine. And occasionally I'll have a little flare up and I just do my exercises every 4 hours instead of at night. And the doctor said, pregnancy would be terrible and all these things would be terrible. And I'm just a big believer in exercise. My knees, I had some trouble with, and I thought, well, I think I'll just start doing knee exercises because if I have surgery, I'm going to want those muscles, around them really strong, and now I don't really have knee problems. But it's very difficult to get other people to do it, and I have a physical therapist daughter and a physiatrist for a husband, and they said, tell me about it.
Exactly.
Oh, Rose,
anyway, keep doing them. It's well worth a little bit of time you invest.
Once
you have a maintenance program. So that's my comment.
It needs to just be a habit. Just absolutely be a habit. Just be part of your daily routine. So for sure. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Linda emailed.
I remember hearing similar words from our own mother.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
Linda emailed to say she's been trying to take good care of her body most of her life, but would like to know if PT is able to do a thorough assessment to find maybe subtle shifts in the body before they become a problem. If so, is there a particular PT specialist she should be looking for? So kind of a fine-tuning thing here she's asking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
absolutely. Yeah. So one of the questions is, if we find these subtle shifts and things that are maybe asymmetrical, or you're a little tight here, or, you know, a little weak there, whether or not those are actually going to manifest as problems down the road, we don't really know.
Correct. And so that's part of the issue, is everybody has a little bit of asymmetry. Some of them become symptomatic and problematic, and for other people, they don't. So it's, you know, is it worth her time to go and see someone? That's a $1 million question. I guess until they become problematic, I don't know that it's helpful, because we don't have predictors as to which asymmetry is going to start creating problems. I guess the biggest thing is, if there's an activity she does that is completely symmetrical, such as walking, things like that, and she notices an imbalance, that's probably worth investigating. But just know that we all have some side-to-side differences that can manifest as pain or not manifest. We really don't know why some do and some don't.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, that's an important thing to keep in mind, you know, and that's partly why they don't do an MRI and everyone that walks in the door with back pain, because they will see pathology in most everybody's spine over the age of 40. But whether or not that's actually the pain generator, or whether it's anything that's significant enough to be treated, is still an unknown factor. And that's sort of us taking the 10,000 foot view of medical care here, and right, where you put your healthcare dollars.
Right.
A listener emailed wondering how to care for their shoulder after overuse from shoveling out the driveway. Every little movement hurts, and they have lots more shoveling to do. Oh, we all know about that, I think.
Exactly. Well, unfortunately, now that she's kind of in the throes of it, if you will, the best thing we can do is manage her symptoms. And so I don't know how old Alyssa is, but the one thing we don't want to do is kind of completely immobilize or splint. So I like to use the term police. She needs to police her condition. So she needs to be a little protective of it and do some optimal loading. In other words, she needs to move her shoulder through a pain-free range kind of frequently with gentle movement. So we don't want her to completely immobilize her arm. And then use some good anti-inflammatory strategies. So in the acute phase, I would consider using some icing to decrease the inflammatory process and moving her arm gently. And with regards to the rest of her shoveling, boy, I hope she has lives in a nice neighborhood where perhaps there's a neighbor boy that can help her out, or somebody with a snowblower. This snow that is really hard and crunchy, and you have to use a lot of force to kind of break it up, is really hard on a person's body for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today as we take a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Look at all kinds of physical therapy issues on the program today. Larry Mueller with my guest Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them with us, and thank you for joining in. Lots of callers online, so let's go to the phones. And Rose in Menomonee Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Rose.
I've had chronic osteoarthritis problems in several areas of my body. I'm 76 years old. And a couple of them are chronic, and I do exercise. I know how to work with them. But in the last week, actually a few days, I've developed a new spot on the upper part of my leg, on the very outside, like when you lift your leg up and down, you can feel that joint, whatever joint that is there. And I would say it felt like a hip. I've never had any hip issues. I've had everything else, but not hip. And I had always been told that if it was hip, it, you'd feel the pain in the groin area. But I don't know what this is on the outside.
Is it far on the outside where you can kind of touch it or palpate it, Rose?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if it's more greater trochanteric bursitis, because you are correct when you say typically hip pain is kind of deep and it does kind of manifest as groin pain. So I'm thinking it's greater trochanteric bursitis. Easy for me to say. Were you going to say something, Rose?
Pardon?
Were you going to say something? I thought.
Oh, I was just going to say I've had bursitis issues in my shoulders and I've had one on my elbow. And so, and yeah, I wondered if this could be a bursitis. But what is that? What is that joint there? What did you call it?
It's well, go ahead, Lori.
It's called the trochanteric bursa, and it's the greater trochanter of your femur, which is the long bone of your thigh, and makes up the proximal, the end at the hip joint. It makes up part of your hip joint, but there's a bony prominence on the outside of your hip. And if you sit and put your fingers kind of on the outside of your hips, there's a bone there. And as you flex your hip up and down, like you're marching, you'll kind of feel a band of tissue called your iliotibial band kind of slide back and forth against that trochanter, that bony prominence. And there's a bursa there. So if you do a lot of repetitive activities, we see it in runners, cyclers, things like that, you will irritate that bursa and you get a bursitis. So probably not unlike some of your other ones. It's fairly easily treated. Cortisone injections work well.
Right. And if your hip is weak on that side and your hip is falling a little bit when you're standing in single limb stance, that'll cause that IT band or that tissue to get even tighter. If you sit with your legs crossed for a prolonged period of time, that can actually make it tighter as well. So some hip strengthening would be a good strategy for you. It's probably worth seeing a physical therapist and getting some exercises. It sounds like you're pretty compliant with doing exercises and that you manage, you know, joints with osteoarthritis well. So I think you'd be a great candidate to see a PT for a couple times, see if you can get it under control. If not, then you could consider some sort of injection.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you, Rose. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Todd in Menominee, we'll go to you now. Hi, Todd.
In December, my age is 67, and I consider myself a good ice skater. Anyways, I caught an edge and landed on my shoulder. And I had a lot of pain initially, and I started working my shoulder kind of like a jumping jack. When you do a jumping jack with your arms, you touch at the top. And it was very painful, and it's been like 6 weeks now, and my pain is, it's still there, but it's, you know, it's probably 50% better. I'm just wondering whether I'm doing the right thing or not.
Well, you'd think that within a six-week time frame, if it were really going to get better all on its own, it probably would have by now. You could have irritated your rotator cuff. You could have irritated the bursa that live under kind of the acromial roof, if you will. It sounds like you're a very active person. And for me, I would recommend seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits to see, A, if you're doing the proper exercises. B, you might need a little bit of manual therapy to kind of correct the movements of your shoulder. And if they can't get you better, then it's warranted to go on and see a physician. But I think seeing a physical therapist for a couple of visits would be a really good thing for you, especially if you're an active ice skater. We want to get you back out there. Lori?
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's fairly common when you fall either directly on your shoulder or on an outstretched arm that you damage your rotator cuff. So you could have strained your rotator cuff. You could have a small rotator cuff tear, and you might need some very specific rotator cuff exercises that are not being addressed with the jumping jack activity that you're doing. So getting a few things specifically focused on the muscles that you're having difficulty with. And as Jill said, maybe a little bit of manual therapy if you've lost some mobility there to help get you over the hump.
There you go, Todd. Thank you very much for calling. Well, Rick in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Rick. Thank you for calling.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Some metrics. This is a knee replacement question. 58, little over 300 pounds. I need to have both knees replaced. My question is, what are the challenges of having both knees replaced at the same time versus doing one at a time? And the consideration for having both done at the same time has more to do with taking advantage of the max out-of-pocket insurance that I have.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are a lot of people that get them done at the same time, and I think mostly because once you have it done once, a lot of times you don't like to go back and get the second one done. A total knee replacement is much more challenging to recover from than a total hip replacement. So it's a lot of work to get them done. You know, one of the disadvantages is that you don't have a good knee to rely on during your recovery period. Although if you have two bad knees, maybe you don't have a great knee to begin with. You know, the advantage is you go through the therapy and you get them both done at the same time, and you're going through the same thing on both knees. And it, you know, it cuts the recovery time in half because you're doing them both.
I would definitely say that to prepare for this, if this is truly the option you want to do, is you're going to want to make sure that you have really good upper body strength to help with transfers. And so getting on a good upper body strengthening program, very specific from a physical therapist, would be very helpful for you. And then, as Lori mentioned earlier, with regards to total knee replacements, you do not want hot knees going into a surgery. So you want your knees in an optimal condition. So you want to make sure that you haven't done a lot to inflame them or irritate them prior to surgery. Then the other thing that I would consider with you is, as soon as you can, you would be a great candidate to do rehabilitation in the pool and get unloaded and unweight bearing, so you could do both knee rehabs in the pool. And Lori is shaking her head yes and smiling at me.
Yeah. With your weight, and if you get them done at the same time, you're really going to need to unweight them as part of your rehab. Because you're not going to have a need to offload the surgical knee onto. So, you know, getting in a pool and deep water bicycling, walking, doing things like that to get those knees moving in an unweighted environment is going to be key, I think. So making sure that you have that in place.
Right. So I think, as Lori alluded to, doing them at the same time is doable, but you need a really good prehab and you need to have your post-operative care really well planned out. But I think it's definitely doable.
All right. There you go, Rick. Thank you very much and good luck with the surgeries. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Ingrid in Eagle River, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi. With a diagnosis of Parkinsonism and dermatomyositis, I was wondering what activities or exercises I can do in addition to my all-over high activity level. I'm in Eagle River, and I do a lot of snowshoeing and walking as much as I can. I last only about 5 minutes now. Not because of the extreme cold, but just because of muscle weakness, pain, and muscle fatigue.
Okay.
Due to your Parkinson's primarily, Ingrid?
They're saying primarily because of the dermatomyositis.
Right. Okay. And so what kind of exercises are you doing now? You had mentioned you were doing some exercises. Are they strengthening exercises or mobility or a little bit of both?
Both. In terms of stationary biking, the snowshoeing and walking, trying to go up and down the stairway, I have 14 steps. And for strength, just doing some upper body things with soup cans and 5-pound weights in my hand. That's about it right now.
Okay.
So I think the thing that's missing, Lori, is maybe some lower extremity strengthening. It sounds like she's doing some really nice endurance exercises for her lower extremity with the biking, the going up and down stairs, and the snowshoeing. But I'm not sure that there's good, like, squat-type strengthening exercises to her program. Is that what you were thinking?
Right, right. Well, and I think giving both those things going on in her life, she would benefit from the guidance of a PT. Like, right. this is my PT, and this is the person you go to who knows your history, who has set you up on a program, who is assessing the response to that, and watching you as you change over time. Because with both those conditions, you're going to get progressive symptoms.
Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. We are going to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Lori and Jill, and you can ask your questions. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Larry Mueller Show. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our physical therapists are back with us to talk about sticking with your therapy and exercise long term, and even how that can improve some chronic illnesses and conditions. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW, and Lori Tyne Brody, Physical Therapist and an Athletic Trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions for them, I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got an ache and a pain you want to have them comment on. Give a call, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Bill in Cottage Grove next. Bill, thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry. I have an ache and a pain in my rear end, actually. And it was 10 days ago. I was in the pool for rehab on a torn meniscus, trying to avoid some surgery, when the next day I came home and felt this pain in my rear hip side on the left side, and subsequently was thought to be a sacral ligament stretch or strain. And I'm wondering if your guests have seen this before and would recommend some treatment. I've been in the pool subsequent to that for several times and without much relief. And the next step, I think, was for me to try a belt, which would circumvent my problem area and tighten it and hold it together. So I'm curious if they have any recommendations or exercises that I should be doing outside the pool.
Sure.
So specifically, Bill, where is this? Is it really on your kind of left buttock area, or is it more on the side of your hip?
No, it's in the back. It's on the, clearly on the back.
Okay. And do you have any symptoms that go down your leg or down your buttock at all?
Not yet.
Well, that's good.
Do you have any idea what brought this on?
I have no idea. I had a flu shot the day before I was in the pool. I doubt that's the answer, but we did do some pretty extensive exercises. This was with another physical therapist, and I can describe them for you, but it would take too long for me to do that. But that afternoon and the next day, the pain appeared, and it hurts to I get to a certain position, for example, if I'm leaning over and come back up. I get to about, almost up, but not all the way up, and it's very painful. And especially in the morning, getting out of bed and sitting up and down. But as I sit, of course, it doesn't bother me. I have a small mini bike that I have here that I got because of the recommendation of the physical therapist, and use that regularly throughout the day, and that doesn't bother anything.
It sounds It sounds mechanical to me, Lori. It sounds like a little mechanical, maybe SIJ something. I don't know that you can sprain a ligament, a sacral ligament, by doing the activities in the pool. That doesn't seem, I think that's a stretch.
Yeah. Only, pardon the pun, only if you're really hypermobile, like if you had Ehlers-Danlos or had some sort of systemic hypermobility where you were used to, you know, shifting and stuff. But to, you know, those ligaments in your pelvis are really tough ligaments. And, you know, if you are on land and doing single leg hopping, leaping, jumping, okay, you know, maybe I could see that. But if you're in a pool, generally unweighted, you know, I work in a pool pretty much all day long, and I can't think of anything I would have somebody do short of single leg hopping in the shallow end that could potentially cause a ligament issue in your SI joint. So, you know, my gut is that it's more muscular.
Piriformis?
Yeah, maybe piriformis or a gluteal muscle or something that you did deep in, like one of your deep hip rotator things. Like, you know, I do some hip turnout things that really get deep into your tush that that could stir that up, but you could reproduce it with stretching kinds of, you know, trying to stretch those muscles. It'd be reproducible on an exam, I would think. So I guess I'd go back to your physical therapist and have your physical therapist do an exam of that area and see if he or she can find the source of that pain and figure it out. I wouldn't assume it's a ligament. That would be pretty far down on my differential list.
Right. I think more muscle.
There you go, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, let us know what you find out. I'm curious now.
Yeah, and if you can prevent your meniscus surgery. So that's a great thing too. I think you're doing the right thing by doing the conservative route there. So we'd love to hear your outcomes with that.
Speaking of outcomes, Kim in Eau Claire is up next. I think she called in last time. Hi, Kim.
Hi, it's Kim from Eau Claire, and I called. I had been having injections in my right knee. Had been bothering me. I had fluid. Ended up having an MRI, which showed a medial and a lateral tear. Medial was worse than the lateral. And 12 days ago, I had meniscus surgery. So I'm 12 days out. I just saw the physical therapist today. Everything's looking good. My quad seemed to be firing good, and I've been doing exercises before I saw her, and that's kind of where I've been at. So,
wow,
that's good. Awesome. So you had meniscal tears both on the medial and lateral side, Kim. Is that right?
That's correct. A little bit more on the medial side.
Okay. So you had a cleanup, a meniscectomy, and they cleaned up and kind of debrided the stuff in your knee. Is that what they did?
That's what they did.
Okay, good. So now the important things are going to be long-term health of your knee. So now you're looking down the road and saying, okay, I've lost some meniscus. You know, one of the questions that you want answered is how much of your meniscus you lost, if they just cleaned it up and trimmed it, or if they had to take out a portion of it that was torn, because it affects the ability of the remaining meniscus to transfer load across the joint space. And so if you don't take good care of yourself, you can have progressive arthritis in that joint once you lose meniscus. So it's important that you maintain a healthy body weight. It's important that you wear good supportive shoes to if you're walking or standing and so on, so that you can get some additional shock absorption. It's important that you continue to exercise and keep your quadriceps and your glutes strong so they can absorb shock and offload your knee. So now you're shifting gears into a joint protection phase. Why are you laughing at me?
Well, I'm laughing because this is exactly what we started to talk about at the top of the hour, that, you know, Kim is one of those people who's not really going to finish rehab, but he's going to go into wellness, and we're talking to him about long-term health and management of his knee so he can maintain a healthy lifestyle. So it's exactly what we talked about at the top of the hour. That's all.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Very good. Yeah. So there's a theme here. There's a theme here if you haven't picked up on it yet.
But thanks for the update, Kim. That's great news. I'm glad we got to the source of your symptoms and identified the issue and that it was taken care of.
Yeah. Thank you, Kim. Good luck with your rehab. Tammy in Mason, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Hi, Tammy. What can we do for you?
Okay, I had the prognosis that I had spine stenosis from my skull to towards the back of my shoulder, and now I got scoliosis because I had to go to the hospital because I fractured and broke a few ribs. And they also said that I got bone deterioration.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
What can I do about this?
So do you have pain in your arms or in your neck, Tammy, that goes with your stenosis? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, I got migraines really bad. You know how you want to crack your neck, you know, just to get a kink out of it?
Yep.
I can't do that because I've got no cartilage.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very painful. Yeah. And then spine, I guess, is curving in and out, in and out, in and out.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Have you seen a physical therapist yet for this?
Yes, I have. And they said they can't do nothing for me. See, my arms, they dislocate, and I got to get another operation from the Army. And they got, it's got two tumors in where the shoulder blade is. It's just major pain all the time.
Okay.
And I got these migraines that are so bad.
Yeah. Well, my guess is the reason the physical therapists are kind of pushing the pause button here is that the surgery for your tumors is taking priority.
Right.
And so they're probably not going to start on any rehabilitation program and plan of care until you get this other issue resolved. Some of the symptoms that you're experiencing could be from the tumor. Some of it could be from the scoliosis. Some of it could be because you have no cartilage. You have a whole bunch of risk factors at play. It gets really hard to sort out what's causing what and where to even begin. So sometimes it's best to deal with the medical issues first. So getting this surgery for the tumors, dealing with whatever's happening with your shoulders and their instability, and then seeing where you're at and where you could get the most benefit from physical therapy.
Yeah. Yep.
Does that make
Tammy,
sense,
good luck.
Tammy?
Yeah, she's got a lot going on.
Sorry, I think we lost
I didn't
her.
Catch that. Tam,
what can I do with my spine?
So I think again, what Lori was talking about is all of this will be contingent upon post-surgery after you get those tumors removed and then start addressing your spine as well as your stenosis in your neck. They're probably all kind of interwoven, and let's eliminate that variable of the tumors first and get those out, and then they'll start addressing things related to your spine. But I think the priority right now is the surgery.
Good luck. Thank you very much, Tammy, for calling. Wow, lots of issues there. Let's go to Lou in Madison next. Hi, Lou.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, about 4 days ago, I slipped and fell on the ice on the concrete, and I hit my tailbone. And, it hurts a lot. So I started out with icing, and then I did icing and heat. In the last day or so, I've just been doing heat. And I know from what I've read, it sounds like it just takes forever when you do this to get better. But I'm wondering if there's anything more I should be doing. Oh, I'm also taking ibuprofen.
Good for you. Is it painful to sit, Lou?
Yes.
So I can give you a little tip you can use to offload your tailbone when you sit. You can roll two towels up. So take two, they're called like hand towels, not big bath towels, but the medium-sized towels, and roll them up and make them kind of parallel to your thigh bone. So when you sit, you have one under each sit bone, and that way your tailbone will be free in space. And sometimes that helps people with sitting, so you're not loading right on your tailbone. So that's one thing you can do. So the anti-inflammatories are a good strategy as long as you can take them with any other medications you're on. Lori, do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah. So is your pain directly on your tailbone?
Yes, and a little bit across.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you can also fracture that area. So, you know, I would say if you're not feeling better in the next little bit, you might see a physical therapist. There are some treatments that they can use for this. I'd probably see a women's pelvic health specialist for this because of the kinds of treatments that they might use for this. There's some little manipulation mobilizations they can use depending upon, you know, kind of the status of your tailbone. So, yes, they do take a long time, but if you want to have a visit with a pelvic floor physical therapist, they can also give you some other strategies to help see if you can move this along.
Right. And there are many of those in Madison, and just have an appreciation. There are a lot of ligaments that attach to that tailbone, and so you could have sprained some of those as well. So there's different strategies that they can give you, Lou.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much. Well, Nick in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Just got a question for you. I had carpal tunnel, and my wife, she's like, yeah, you should get it. It's great. The worst thing I've ever done in my whole life. I wish I would have never done it. And I'm serious. I mean, I've been to specialists, and they said the only thing they can do is suggest pain management. I was wondering, both hands were done. I died on the table, actually, so it was really bad. But my work is I grab a lot, and now my hands are just hurting. They just hurt. And the specialist said that ibuprofen won't touch it because it's nerve pain. And she's like, the only thing I can suggest is pain management. And I was just wondering if you have any suggestions. Like I said, it makes me mad when I talk to people, and they're like, oh, yeah, carpal tunnel, that was great for me. It works so often to me. I just, it just didn't do anything. It made it worse.
So okay. What brought on your carpal tunnel symptoms in the first place, Nick? You said you grip a lot at work, so is this a work-related injury?
And according to the doctor, and I don't know, I think he might be full of it, but he said PlayStation and playing video games and stuff for hours on end, it kind of made it worse.
Right. Okay.
That's all he said.
Has anybody looked at your neck?
No. The specialist just said, she touched my hands a little bit and said, there's nothing I can do. You have to go to pain management. That's all she did say. Mm-hmm. And she's a specialist, so it was kind of weird. But yeah. I was just hoping you could suggest like exercises or anything. So
there are several things that come to mind, especially jumping off of Jill's question. Anytime you have something in both hands, both legs, both feet, you start to think central. So, yes, you could certainly have carpal tunnel. The fact that it didn't help you makes you wonder if it really did originate at your wrist, which is where carpal tunnel happens. You can get carpal tunnel symptoms that start elsewhere. They can originate at your elbow. They can originate at your shoulder. They can originate at your neck. Okay. Could also, you know, when you talked about video games, it made me think of DeQuer veins. You could also be having some tendinopathy in some of the muscles in your thumb from that as well. So I would see a physical therapist. Originally, I was thinking, you know, someone who's a hand specialist, but now I'm kind of thinking maybe seeing an orthopedic PT who can really do a stem to stern evaluation and see if some of this is originating someplace besides at your wrists. Because you are right. Most people have the surgery and do great. They don't have symptoms after that. So the fact that you're telling me that you had it on both and neither of them worked makes me think that there's something else amiss.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
Good luck.
So that's where
Thank you.
Go next.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. Lou from Menasha is wondering about resistance bands, pros and cons of using the flat style bands. He's a middle-aged guy in good shape, and are they any good for creating and maintaining muscle?
So that's a great question. And those bands that Lou is referring to come in different colors, which are different resistances or loads. So with regards to, is it enough? It kind of depends upon your, the muscles that you're working. So if you're a big, strong, strapping football player and you want to increase your quadricep strength or your glute strength, the bands may not be enough resistance for you. However, if you're looking to increase arm strength, those muscles are much smaller in mass, bands can be very, very helpful and beneficial. So it's not a yes, no, it kind of depends on what your intent is, how strong you already are, your muscle mass, things like that. But they are a wonderful option for people for exercising at home if they meet your needs.
Yeah, they're an inexpensive option. And, you know, I would certainly get some instruction, particularly if you've had any kind of problems like shoulder problems. One of the issues about resistance bands as compared to, say, a weight machine is that the resistance continues to increase the farther you stretch it. And free weights don't work that way. Weight machines don't work that way. Most weight machines have variable resistance that match the length tension relationship of the muscle. And most free weights, because you're changing the lever arm to gravity with the free weight, changes the amount of resistance your muscle sees. In contrast, bands continue to increase in resistance the farther you stretch them. So you just have to be a little bit careful in how they're used.
There you go. Well, just to wind things up, Melissa emailed to say she's had nothing but high praise for her physical therapist, which she started working with after a total hip replacement 3.5 years ago, and have continued to offer support when needed. She's active, participates regularly in Pilates, and likes to hike, cross country, ski, walks the dog, enjoys all of it. She has a great group of like-minded people to work with and play with, and when it's too cold to be outside, she works on her
elliptical. I heard a loudspeaker coming from the police side on Lafayette Square Park.
Well
that's,
on that
that's
happy
exactly,
note...
Right. That's exactly what we like to hear.
And we are out of time. Jill, Lori, thank you both so much for being with us today, and we'll look forward to your next visit March 15th. Thanks, Lori.
Sounds
and Jill.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori.
Jill is an associate professor. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them. Of course, Jill with the UW-Madison as well. Tomorrow, we'll talk with the editor of Our Wisconsin magazine about some stories in their latest issue. And in the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.